Welcome to 2024 and Season 5 of the Religion Podcast, where a rabbi and a reverend walk into a podcast and talk real about religion.
Hello, Joel.
Here we are again. Rabbi Eric, what's up, dude?
How old are you today?
I'm 55 in a day.
Man. As we say, may you reach to 120 in good health.
I hit the Sammy Hagar speed limit. Come on.
Is that the age he died? No. Is he dead?
You remember that song?
No.
I can't drive 55.
Oh, yeah. 55. Yeah, that's a good song, actually. Yeah.
That was the pre-Van Halen Sammy Hagar, I think.
Nice. Well, happy birthday, my friend. I'm about to hit a big round number myself in a month.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about it. I'm having some struggles. That could be a whole separate either episode or... Actually, that could be great. It could be like free therapy.
Aging?
I mean, that's why we do this anyway, isn't it?
Free therapy for each other?
Oh, wait, was
no,
I...
we're not helpful to each other.
We're not? Come on. Wait, should I be offended?
All we do is create more thoughts and, you know, oh my gosh, we just make it bigger and bigger and bigger and heavier, right? Therapy's
Well, that's true. Yeah. That's definitely true. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Therapy's about smoothing and settling and reducing and simplifying to me.
That's interesting. I'm going to have to ask my wife if she agrees with that, who's a clinical psychologist,
right,
everybody.
Right.
That's interesting. On the face of it, I agree. But I never liked the idea – this is so off topic. I'll let you decide. You know, you're the keeper of the edits.
Go.
You have the last word. All of a sudden, my voice is going to say vote for Trump, and I'm going to be like, what? I've never liked the term shrink. Mm-mm. Even as a kid, I've hated that term. Like, I'm going to go see my shrink. Like, I mean, which is kind of similar to what you just said of, like, you know, lessening and ameliorating. But I think of good therapy as expanding, not shrinking. But let's talk about angels and demons.
Wait, we can't just switch off this fast. We got to stay
here.
No,
I get the last word. I'm the only child.
And this will be a great transition to our topic of today, which you just previewed, angels and demons and spirits, etc. I have fired therapists and counselors who only listen, who never say anything. Like, no, I need you to hold me accountable. I need you to challenge me on this. I need you
100%.
Yeah. And every now and then you get a softie who will just... listen to you and nod and ask a few questions and never recommend anything.
So something that I've learned is it's dependent on the school of therapy that they belong to. If they come from, like, you know, a very traditional psychotherapy Freudian approach, that's what they are. If they're what my wife is, which is more of like, you know, I joke that what she does is life coaching, but, you know, she does CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, where it very much is, okay, you're afraid of water. This week, I want you to 3 times go into a pool and put your ankles in water. And then when she sees the client the following week, they say, okay, how many times did you do it? And if they say one, you know, but yeah, I want a therapist that's going to, like, yell at me.
Yeah. Tell me the science. You know, tell me the bad habits that got me into the thinking, feeling patterns that I'm stuck in. And then give me a tool or an off ramp or something that coaches me outside of it. I don't
Absolutely.
Know. So is that what angels and demons are? They are a quickie... answer to those dark places we don't want to go with our therapist. So we just say angel, demon, spirit, so we don't have to go there.
Oh, wow. I mean, there's something very – I hate using the word deep, but there's something very real about what you just said in terms of – and this wasn't on my radar for today, but in terms of throughout history – us kind of relegating mysteries or difficult things to things we don't have control over, like God, right? Now, by the way, I'm not saying that we don't have any control over God. I'm saying that's kind of how it works, right? Like, I'm afraid, I'll just use, you know, I'm afraid of the torrential downpour. It must be the, you know, Poseidon or the water god or Adonai that's doing that because I must have done something wrong, which of course leads us into Job, which we're going to talk about today. But, you know, this topic is interesting because it on the face of it, or not on the face of it, but if you ask an average educated Jewish person about angels and demons, they would tell you, like, no, that's not part of Judaism. And, you know, and that's coming from someone with, you know, a background in Judaism. And to an extent, they're right. You know, in the Torah, there's very little. You know, there's a little bit about the angels, like the angels surrounding God. And of course, you know, we've talked about things like Leviathan before and some of the beasts. And, you know, Satan is in the Torah. You know, we could, with Job, we could talk about the snake with Adam and Eve. But really the focus in terms of non-human, you know, divine beings is God. But then you get into the Talmud and the Midrash, and it's like, whoa, I didn't know Judaism has all these stories and, you know, the Golem and all of these myths of monsters and like half monsters. And so, yeah, it's definitely a part of Judaism, you know, maybe not normative Judaism the way I practice or the way my congregation practices in 2024. But it's certainly in there, so to speak.
Yeah, I think human beings struggle with trying to figure out what is truly God / holy and all the beautiful, loving stuff that we hope really is God versus the other stuff that we know is us. What is all that stuff in the middle? And if we like it, if it's good, we'll think, it's not God, but it sounds like God. It's probably a God messenger or an angel. Or if that sounds bad. It sounds scary. That sounds evil. That sounds tempting. You're trying to sucker me into doing something God doesn't want me to. Well, then that's a devil or a demon. And then all of that is what we call the spiritual realm. And there's so many traps here to assign something to a non-God being or a non-human when it really may be God or it really may be human. There's a trap here to name that middle space between God and us as the spiritual realm when everything about God is also spirit and everything about us is also spirit. So I get disturbed by the concept of angels and demons, although they are all over the Bible or people's interpretation of the Bible.
So am I hearing you that for you it's a little bit of like an excuse or a cop-out sometimes? Is that right?
I think it's an interesting way to try to cope with the mystery, the unknown, or the uncontrollable. And usually, but we should probably get into some of those stories. So what are the Hebrew Bible stories where they're playing in that middle space between humanity and God?
I think right at the beginning, which of course is where a baseball game is in the Torah, the big inning, right? Sorry, everyone. I'm so sorry. The snake that speaks to Eve is considered, you know, like either it's Satan trying to kind of show God that God's creations aren't, you know, as wonderful as God thinks they are. And so, you know, the story of the forbidden fruit is so fascinating for any number of reasons. I mean, that's what makes it such a classic story. You could take it from the standpoint, you know, for a Christian, I mean, obviously original sin, but limitations, free will, you know, we were talking about, maybe it does relate, you know, that, you know, you and I talking to each other like makes things more complicated, right? Well, that's what happens when they eat from the tree of knowledge. All of a sudden, oh my God, I'm naked and I'm embarrassed. I got to put something on. Whereas before they were living in an, almost this like blithful naivete. I don't know if I used blithful right, but, and there's a beauty to that naivete, right? Like sometimes you and I, we talk about this all the time. It's like what my professor said, religion hurts. That's why I'll give you an antidepressant on the side. Like the more you know, the more it hurts. And yet, like we wouldn't say we shouldn't continue to strive and struggle and learn. And so that serpent kind of represents some sort of divine or semi-divine force kind of in the hands of but that humanity has to deal with. And I think I mentioned on our last episode, my adult ed class, which has listeners to this. That's actually where we've gotten a few of our topics from, you may remember.
Cool.
We're reading this book right now called The Legends of the Jews, where it takes Midrashim stories in chronological order from everything in Judaism that's not the Torah. So that's where we get the word midrash from, like a story that's not in the Torah. And a good bit of it has to do with this business of Adam and Eve and the snake. And going back to your previous comment about what these things represent, one of the stories is, I'm getting confused between Cain and Abel. I'm going to tell you the story anyway, though, because it does. Oh, your editing's going to be fun. Because it does connect, actually, is after Cain kills his brother Abel, and of course, it's the first murder in the Bible, which doesn't say much for humanity, given that it's only the second generation of people. One of the things Cain says in this midrash is basically, God, it's your fault. You let me do it. Like you gave me the ability to do it. So it's like you made me this way, but now you're mad that I did something that's exactly in the way that you made me. Kind of what gives? And Adam gives a similar kind of reproach to God about this snake business. Now that's not exactly along the lines of, you know, angels and demons, but it is that kind of liminal, it's not quite divine, it's not quite human, what's going on here?
So you're saying he used it as an excuse for why it wasn't him that killed his brother. He blamed it on God.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
So
in the Midrash, not the Torah, but yes.
And the snake is a symbol of this middle creature that isn't God and isn't us, so angel, demon, spirit, something that gets in between and maybe tries to nudge us towards good or maybe tries to nudge us towards evil. And there we get very dualistic in the spiritual realm, I think. I think people have a really hard time in this middle space, the angel, demon, spirit space. Something's good or bad. And we're not sure which, but in the end, it's good or bad. There's no debate. Like, it's either a God angel or it's a Satan demon. A or B, period. So this, in that Cain Abel story, the brother feels like, all right, God, your absence, your something whispered to me to do this and didn't stop me. You should have sent angels to stop me. You shouldn't have let the demons whisper suggestions like this to me. So when it happened, it's not my fault. It's yours. I don't control the spiritual realm. You do. So if one of those whispers got in my brain and forced me to act in some stupid, evil, murderous way, that's on you, God. And I feel like that's why we speak. Sometimes angels, demons, spirit space is a human creation. We think of a former past human who is now existing in that space, and we feel their presence. We hear their voice. Sometimes in this angel, demon, spirit space, we think of it as God. God sent someone, something, a donkey or a snake or who knows what.
Another good example.
Right? To whisper to us and to warn us and to give us guidance. And then other times we think of it as evil, evil itself, evil, whatever the embodiment or the vocalization of evil sends a message to us in this middle space. And it's hard to watch through Scripture or through Midrash interpretation of Scripture or through our present stories of just our own life. What was it? Was it a present? Was it me? What, did I say that to myself? Did I think that myself? Or did evil say that, think that to me? Or did God think that, feel that, say that to me?
So yeah, let's get into some of those specific stories. You just mentioned the donkey. So very briefly, there's a fascinating story in the Torah. The king Balak hires this prophet Balaam to curse the Israelites. And it turns out Balaam's curse ends up being a blessing, which Jews say every morning, which is fascinating in its own right. But Balaam rides a donkey and kind of is yelling at the donkey to rush. And the donkey's like, the donkey speaks, "Hey, am I not the donkey that's been taking you to where you need to go?" And it's this, you know, it's kind of this humorous thing, but it's also like, wait a minute, what is this donkey, right? So something you just said that I think members of my congregation may have heard before is, you know, we have this story in Judaism that on Shabbat, so from Friday evening to Saturday evening, there are two angels that kind of accompany us through the 24 hours or 25 hours of Shabbat. And we, when Shabbat starts, we sing the song Shalom Aleichem that literally welcomes the angels. I mean, you know the word shalom. And there's this beautiful story. I mean, you were talking about like angels being things we want and demons being things we don't. There's this beautiful story that on Shabbat, there's actually a kind of a good angel and a bad angel, almost like, was it Pinocchio that had like the two, or just like, is that just like a cartoon trope? I'm not remembering offhand.
I don't remember that.
You know, it's like, oh, the good angel says to be, do this one. Oh, but you should do this. And maybe it was Looney Tunes. Anyway, so there's this idea that the good angel is like, you know, if you're getting along with your kids and your spouse and you're celebrating Shabbat and taking in creation, the good angel says, may this be the way Shabbat is always followed. And the bad angel is forced to say amen. Ooh. But the flip is also true, that if you're not really recognizing Shabbat and the grandeur of creation and having a peaceful home and all these things, the bad angel says, may this be the way Shabbat always is. And the good angel is forced to say amen, which is kind of an interesting twist on this angel demon piece.
So Balaam, in that case, we don't think of the donkey as an angel or a demon. We think of a messenger from God coming to the donkey and giving the donkey some holy gifted power for a minute to whisper to Balaam, hey, careful, don't go this way, don't go that fast, don't. And there's like an argument between Balaam and his own donkey, which is really not with a donkey, but with an angel of God speaking through the donkey.
Absolutely.
Is how we think of it. Am I in the ballpark there?
Oh, you're 100% in the ballpark. And I'd say, you know, kol v'chomer all the more so, this idea of angels being messengers is kind of what I would, more a part of normative Judaism. So there's the scene, Abraham has just gotten circumcised. By the way, do you know what age Abraham was when he got circumcised?
Probably in his 50s or something.
Oh, man, 99.
Man.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it probably didn't hurt as much if you're 99.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's interesting, yeah. His sensitivity was not what it was. Anyway, so following his circumcision, the Torah says that three men came to visit Abraham. And one of them says that Sarah will give birth. One of them tells Abraham about the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. And then one of them, our tradition says, kind of helped just heal Abraham's pain by visiting, which is where we get the mitzvah that visiting a sick person is so important. But the point here is that angels have one job and one job only. And so the three men slash angels were sent because each of them had one particular message from God. And again, with Abraham, when God commands Abraham a little bit later to sacrifice his son Isaac, and Abraham is in fact about to do so, the tragic and famous story that we call the Akedah, the binding of Isaac, Abraham is about, I mean, it's this unbelievably suspenseful, almost like a movie-like moment. He's about to strike the knife into Isaac, and an angel calls out, "Abraham, Abraham, basically stop what you're doing." So again, an angel representing some sort of message that is from God, but God sends this kind of intermediary of sorts.
Mm-hmm. So let's stay there for a minute in the way that we've crafted angels, demons in the spirit space, the God side. Let's just focus on the ones that may or may not be for God, that we hope are from God, that we say are from God. There's traditions that talk about those angels as having a hierarchy. Sometimes we speak of some of them as archangels versus just angels versus they're not really angels, but they temporarily whisper something that sounds like good advice. And you don't think of that as an angel as much as you think of it as a message of God. And the two words are almost identical anyway. Who are the archangels in the Hebrew Bible? I think of Gabriel or Michael or Raphael, but
yes,
there are some. And what was their role? Where do they come from? What scriptures are they based on, if any?
Yeah, so this is where, you know, the kind of Judaism or that I've studied and do study is not really in this realm. But again, this book, Legends of the Jews, has all sorts of stuff on them. And one thing that I find interesting about the angels is it is like human beings. They bicker, they fight, they don't always get along. God sometimes has to kind of, you know, shush, enough, right? And you know, there's this phrase in our prayer book that we are little less than angels. So it's, again, this liminal space that human beings, unlike other animals, can reach kind of a spiritual level that is unique to human beings. It's not quite divine, but it's also not quite, you know, terrestrial either, to use the, you know, down up metaphor.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the big stories that I think of, the first one that I think of when I think of wrestling with an angel, right, arguing with an angel, is Jacob. And the question—
That's another one.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
The question there is, was Jacob wrestling with an angel of God or with God? And the term Israel suggests that you didn't wrestle with an angel of God. You wrestled with God. So it kind of demotes the angel, but the text does kind of suggest in some weird way that Jacob perceived it not as God, but as a messenger of God or an angel of God or a representative of God. And that's where that comes from. And then
of course, oh, sorry, go ahead.
And Daniel. Daniel's a much later book for y'all. Very late in the canon, as people were forming the canon, and only in Daniel does the imagery of messengers, holy messengers, start to take on a more present life thing. So I think what you're telling me is angels and demons are not as biblical as they are interpretive of the biblical once Judaism got its roots and organized itself into a new way of doing things, maybe on the other side of canon even. I don't know if that's fair.
Canon, like not Canaan, just to
canon,
be clear.
C-A-N-O-N, right. Once y'all figured out what your books are, the angel stories helped interpret those books.
Well, and then this is also like, you know, when we get into the monotheism, monolatry conversation. So just quick recap if, you know, listeners are like, what the heck is he talking about? So monotheism, most people understand, it's the belief that there is only one God in existence. Monolatry is the idea, maybe there are more gods, but mine is the one that I believe in, or mine is better than the other ones, right? And one of the firm, wasn't even a belief. I want to say goal, not that I can, you know, speak for the Talmudists over 1,000 years ago, but one of the goals of the editor of the Talmud was to really lessen the monolatry within Judaism and emphasize monotheism, which is one of the reasons why what most Jews call the watchword of our faith, Shema, is Adonai is our God, Adonai is one, as opposed to many gods, which is what the Egyptians had and what, you know, other ancient Near East, Middle East cultures and religions had. There was one other thing I was going to say, but I'll stop there for a second.
Okay. All of this
No, because I don't remember.
And the reason we thought this was an important topic is part of religion/faith is discernment of the holy. Who is the holy and what does the holy want? Want from us individually and want from all things, all creation, corporately. So, and I sense that in our attempt to discern the holy and what the holy wants, it's hard. There's trap doors and pits and you just, wow. You can't always be sure or confident. And that lack of confidence is an opportunity for faith, but it's also difficult.
And it's interesting. I'll take it the flip way, which is to say the absolute confidence is downright scary, which I think you'd agree with.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Once you know exactly what is God or exactly what is evil, right, you become God, because the only one who knows that is God. And you said originally the original sin. I don't think of that story in Genesis as the original sin. I do see it as trying to explain the origin of sin. Where did
Oh, yes. And I think you've mentioned that before. Yeah. I like that.
Where did sin evil come from? And the reason I think we answer it that way is, well, we know it doesn't come from God. If it comes from God, then God isn't God. And then we hate the thought that it comes from us. So we have to create a middle that isn't God and that isn't us. And we blame the origin of sin on a demon, a Satan, an angel.
Right. And also, you know, going back to, I love what you said. I wrote it down. Religion is the discernment of the holy. You know, I mentioned the Job story and you mentioned it earlier. So just quick recap, Satan basically says to God, I bet I can get one of your holiest people or, you know, followers to kind of forget you or not believe in you or whatever. And God says, well, Job is the best. You can't do it with Job. And so, you know, God basically makes this bet Satan makes this bet with God, and God starts taking things away from Job. So, you know, sickness, crops, bad weather, and then eventually like killing people he loves. And
does God do all that, or does one of God's messengers do that?
Oh, no, I think God does that within the story. I don't think that's an interpretation. And one of the things that I think is so powerful about the story of Job is that it is true in the sense that awful things, tragic things happen to use an oft-quoted phrase, to good people of faith and good people not, you know, not with faith. And that midrash helps explain it. Maybe not in the most palatable of ways, but, you know, if there's a God that loves us and takes care of us and is powerful, why does all of this shit happen? And that's why the story of Job is as powerful and as resonant as it is. Not because we necessarily believe in a personified devil and God that has a bet with each other the way we might do like a Super Bowl bet, right? Which I didn't watch. I just watched Usher. But because the tragedy and unfairness is very true to our experience, and we need to explain it. The last thing I'll say too is something you just kind of inspired my thinking, is that I think we as human beings kind of, I'll use the word invent, which is a loaded word, of course, but invent these angels and demons because it's another way to interact with the divine. You know, if God, again, using the physical metaphor, if God is all the way up there, that God's not reachable, well, the angels are, or the demons are. It's kind of like in Greek mythology when, you know, Hera and Zeus would take like human forms and, you know, copulate with men and women. And it was a way for human beings to have active relationships with the divine, right? And I think we have that urge. Even, I mean, like I have that urge. Like this isn't just historical. Mm-hmm. I think it's very real. By the way, I'm not talking about the urge to copulate with random humans. I realized I said that right after the other thing. I don't want anyone to be like, wait, what did he just say?
So I'm kind of trying to put all this together with the way you talked about the story of Job, because I kind of remember it as like the God Council was around. And the way I think of the story in my head, which may not be textual, so I'm going to have to double check the text now, is that God and God's angels, God's children, God's counsel are all around, and Ha-Satan is there as well. And what I can't tell from that is if Ha-Satan is like an outsider to the council or a regular part of the council. It almost sounds to me like they are saying, no, Ha-Satan is part of the council. And he wasn't absent this day. He was present. You know, kind of like he often skips class. But on this day, he was present. And they go through that whole debate. Nah, Job would never betray me. And God says to Ha-Satan, fine. All that Job has is in your power, Ha-Satan. Do what you wish. And then as Job starts to lose stuff, it's messengers of God? Or of Ha-Satan, or I don't know, but angels, messengers come to Job and tell him, hey, your ox were crushed. Hey, your sheep were burned. Hey, you know, this. But it I don't remember it as God doing that. I remember it as.
Well, so the reason I remember that, and I'm pulling it up on my phone right now, the app Sefaria, which I don't know if I've mentioned before, but it is Sefaria, totally free. It's a Hebrew source, but it has English translations of everything. Uh-huh. It really excels is Midrash, Talmud, and things like that. But it absolutely has the entirety of – I don't know that it has the New Testament. Actually, it does not have the New Testament. But what I remember for sure in Job is at the very end, Job confronts God that appears to Job as like this whirlwind. And God basically, you know, after saying, why did you do this to me? What have I done? I've been faithful, yada, 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 yada. Yeah. God yells at Job. It's not an angel. It's not an emissary.
Right.
God, you know, God basically says, where the hell were you when I created the world? And, you know, this isn't any of your business. And which is also incredibly troubling. But that is all to say that that's what makes me think it's not God's kind of angelic counsel, but God's self.
And I'm with you on that, but I think this is the root of the problem with angels, demons, spiritual beings. In Job 1 and 2, the God counsel of God plus the good God counsel plus the bad folks, Satan, and Satan's messengers, which the beginning of Job basically puts all in one meeting. But it's Job is put under Satan's power by the God counsel, Elohim, and it's HaSatan that goes out and does stuff to Job. And then like 30-something chapters later, Job figures out, I really can't blame any of this crap on God's messengers or God's adversary. My beef is with God. And then God responds. So I think for me, angels and demons are crutches that we use to limp around through life so that we don't blame God or ourselves for what hurts. And in the end—
Or I would say not just hurts, but sometimes what blesses also, right?
Agreed.
Or do you not agree?
I think okay. No. I think we'll give ourselves the credit for what blesses. We won't.
That's fair.
We won't thank that's God fair. For the blessing, or you know, we'll do it quick. The New Testament has, like, it's kind of like Judaism. Fast forward X thousand years. So the very little bit about angels, demons, spirits in real canonical Judaism that starts to appear in the book of Daniel in later Judaism, boy, it explodes in New Testament Christianity to where there are angels and demons all over the place. And part of Jesus's walk is confronting the demons and removing them, or being sent angels, or sending angels, spiritual presences to his disciples to help them stay the path. And that gets really weird in the New Testament when angels and demons take on a new presence before God.
Yeah. Yeah, and going back to what I said earlier, there's all of these stories, and these are kind of easy to read in terms of, you know, not requiring like any sort of background of God even argues with the angels on whether or not people should be created. I think you and I have talked about that before. But yeah, it's fascinating stuff.
Well, and for us, like, so the biggies, right at the start, the angel Gabriel whispers to Mary, you're going to have a holy child. And then that holy child grows up to be, you know, mid to late 20s and is sent into the wilderness before his official ministry starts and is tempted by HaSatan. So in the book of Job, right, this God council with the lead angels and Satan are all around and they mess with Job. Well, at the beginning of the New Testament, Mary is visited by one of those angels and her child is visited by HaSatan. And part of the difference there is, can Jesus do what Job could not? Could Jesus be tempted and suffer and struggle and never fight or give up or argue God? And the closest Jesus gets to that is at the end of his life, where he kind of says, hey, I don't want to do this. Take this cup from me. And then Jesus backs off and goes, but not my will be done, your will be done.
Yes.
Right? And you can almost sense like the Job argument with God that like throws it at God and then God throws it back. Jesus starts the Job argument. Hey, God, I don't want to do it this way. I don't like your plan. Why are you doing this? And he's sweating blood and he's crying blood as he prays, you know, begging God to do it differently. But then instead of like, you know, the defense rests, he defers and gives it all back to God and dies anyway. So there's, and what I think we try to do is we try to imagine the pain and suffering and inspiration, and we can't imagine it being of us, and we can't blame God for it. So we've got to have this other voice. What do you do? Let's put in here a different kind, though. Most of these have either come from God or come from evil, you know, God's adversary, the accuser, the tempter. What about human spirits that become angel demons, that haunt people or that bless people? Are there stories like Elijah when he doesn't die, he's just taken away? What is Elijah at that point? A ghost? A spirit? How do y'all think of Elijah?
That's a good question. Well, Elijah is the harbinger of in the way Judaism understands Elijah, is the harbinger of the Messiah. Like Elijah almost kind of announces the Messiah, when the Messiah will come. And Elijah does have this interesting category of kind of being in this in-between space. So, you know, some people, Jews certainly know, but on Passover, you know, a lot of people famously know that we drink 4 cups of wine. Well, there's a cup that's set out toward the end of the Seder, of the ceremony, that's for Elijah. And it's really fun, especially with young kids, like, you know, you open the door and Elijah's coming in, everyone. And then some people have these setups where like someone will take a sip of the wine when no one's looking and be like, oh, Elijah drank the wine. And so Elijah's used in that context. And again, often used as a way of talking about a brighter and holier future. But this idea, of course, that we get in lots of movies and kind of, you know, the idea of being haunted by people, that's not really as prevalent.
Okay. And there's a story called The Transfiguration. It's the last Sunday before Lent, where Jesus goes up onto a mount and is visited by Moses and Elijah. And some of the disciples see it. And Jesus is talking to them and shines as if his clothes have been perfectly bleached. It's what the text says. In other words, he's pure. The purity of Jesus appears in his skin and in his clothing and all that. He shines. And people sometimes wonder, well, why is he talking to Moses and Elijah? And the answer is kind of obvious, but it's also in this angel, spirit, demon space. Moses and Elijah are dead, and they appear to him. Moses is the great leader of people out of slavery towards freedom/promised land, and Jesus is about to do that. And Elijah is the foreteller, the one who never died, and is the foreteller of the coming of the Messiah. And so Jesus' presence in those two had a significance for folk. But the question is, well, who are Moses and Elijah in that space? Are they ghosts/spirits of the real human? Or are they messengers sent from God? Are they semi-resurrected dead people? Or are they restored angels? And there's a, depending on how you think of that, it really changes your theology about what death is, what after death is, what is beyond death.
And I'm truly not like making light of the story, but what came to my mind was Star Wars. Right. When, you know, like in return, right? Like
Obi-Wan sitting there as a semi, you know, with Yoda.
Obi-Wan, and then after Return of the Jedi, Yoda and the redeemed Anakin / Darth Vader, right?
Right.
That, you know, and we do have this idea in Judaism that someone's memory will always be a blessing. And we also do say, you know, may they rest in peace, which implies some sort of state. Yeah, it's interesting stuff. But discernment of the holy, I'm using that, Joel.
Good. I in the end, all of this, there's a lot of things where Jesus heals people from their demons, and they're gone, and that returns them to their better humanity. I tend to see that when somebody is talking about demons, blaming demons, accusing demons of being part of the problem, I want Jesus to heal them of that and show them that, hey, the problem isn't really a demon at all. It's the racists who came before us that are the reason why racism still exists. It's the greedy who came before us that explains why greed still exists. And don't blame it on God, because God did not create racism and greed. And, you know, you don't have to blame it on yourself personally if you don't want to, but you can look back at those who came before us and say that's the origin of sin, is those who came before us. But we've been stained by it, and we're complicit in it, and we're not working hard enough to unravel it from all of creation. So don't spend a lot of time blaming Ha-Satan and Satan's minions or fallen angels, so to speak, as to the source of evil. Look at our ancestors and look at ourselves as the reason evil is still in the world, and do your best to be healed of those things and to heal each other of those things so that holy is more obvious and we can
nice.
We can thank God for the holy instead of blaming Satan and other fallen angels for the evil.
Beautiful. Absolutely. This was good.
Yay. What demons are cursing you lately? Haunting you?
Save it for the after show.
Okay.
Have a good week, everyone. Keep it real.
Thank you for joining us on the Religion Podcast today, where a rabbi and a reverend walk into a podcast and talk real about religion. I'm Reverend Joel Talbert, and on behalf of Rabbi Eric Linder and all the Religion fans out there, we thank you for being with us today and invite you to send us any feedback or suggestions or topic ideas to religionpodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, keep it real.